Luck on Sunday, brought to you by Whirlpool. Bet with the world.
Welcome to the Luck on Sunday podcast, a weekly audio digest of all the best bits of Luck on Sunday, free to air every Sunday from 9 o'clock, that brings you the best guests and insight from around the racing world.
We will, of course, start with the Grand National. I'm hoping to have a Grand National participant in the studio with me first thing this morning. He will be along in just a few moments. Not Rishi Prasad or Jonathan Harding, but great to see you both anyway.
Good to see you, Nick. How are you doing?
Very well. Did you enjoy the week? Did you enjoy the weekend?
I thought it was a great week. I think we had top-class racing in the first couple of days, and then there was a great Grand National with so many horses bang in there at the business end of affairs. So, yeah, really good week.
An unusual Grand National. Yeah. That's the thing. Every time you think you've got this race nailed, it confounds you.
Yeah, the Grand National obviously has come in for a lot of split opinions since yesterday's race. A lot of people feel that it has achieved everything that everybody at Aintree set out to achieve when they made all the adjustments, but then some people feel it's changed the nature of the race so much that is it still the Grand National as many of us remember it? Obviously, that's something that we'll discuss a little bit more.
We will. One thing that isn't optimal this morning is the state of the Luck on Sunday pastries. I know this is a great source of disappointment to you. I'm not quite sure what's happened here. Clearly, there's not a bakery open in London at this time of the morning.
I have to say, Nick, that I have been on this programme a fair few times.
Yeah.
And never have I seen such a paltry offering.
It's awful, isn't it? It really is. It's a bit like when you come in. Do you know what? I don't know if you can see what we've got here. Instead of the usual lovely selection of patisserie, we've got four stale hot cross buns on each plate. Four stale hot
cross buns.
They look
so heavy in your hand as well.
Well, that's because it is. It's like a rock. And it's this. I can only say this is, as I said, it felt like the morning after the night before. I'm minded of staggering in at 3 o'clock in the morning, perhaps slightly the worst for wear, and just sort of scavenging for anything you can find to eat. And this might be, I had hot cross buns. I'll have some of those. I mean,
I'm very disappointed.
Honestly, honestly.
My goodness.
You just caught that one-handed, left-handed.
Yeah, well, these
very
things
good.
Have
weighty.
It's chunky. Yeah,
it is.
A chunky croissant.
There's not a toaster in here, is there?
Right, well, I'm sorry.
So is it still Easter, by the way?
We started badly. It can only get better. And it can only get better by having a lengthy linger over yesterday's Randox Grand National. As I say, Caelan Quinn is going to join us in the studio very shortly. He was the man who rode Naslam, who, it's fair to say, didn't cut an awful lot of ice, but it was his first spin round the Grand National fences, and he'll be able to offer us perspective on exactly how this race was run. And the fact that there were so many horses in contention late on suggested to me that the biggest change of all, Rishi, was the way the jockeys approached the race. And that might have made the biggest difference.
Yeah, I feel from the outset, even lining up, I felt that the jockeys had a more considered approach. I think all the conversations, all the changes, everything that we'd spoken about in the build-up to the Grand National had really sunk into their minds. And I felt that even when they lined up, I know one or two horses were perhaps a little bit keen to get on with it, but I felt even before the race begun, the riders that were involved in it had that considered approach to just be a little bit more gentle in their beginning to end. And that's, as I think, as a consequence, was the result of why. In fairness, if you looked at the two races earlier in the week over the national fences, certainly on Friday, there seemed to be a similar sort of approach.
Yeah. They were using the width of the track. Clearly, those briefings that the ex-jockeys like Ruby Walsh and Mick Fitzgerald were doing were actually percolating this year. I think there was the collective sense of responsibility has been borne by the jockeys.
I think you're absolutely right. Last year was a bit of a weird event, obviously, with the protests, and everybody was sort of on edge and adrenaline was pumping, and I think the race suffered as a result. Whereas this year, every jockey gave their weighing room colleagues enough room, I think. They pretty much stayed in a straight line over those first few flights. Nobody was sort of boxing for position or anything like that because they knew and were briefed to the fact that stay out of trouble, you can win from reasonably far back. You don't have to be in front at the first fence in a race like that. So I think the jockeys deserve a huge amount of credit for the way they rode that race. They took their responsibility really seriously.
And, of course, the key is, Rishi, that in the old days, you never wanted to go down the inside because that's where the biggest drops were and that was the most perilous route. In recent years, jockeys have realised that the inside's absolutely fine, so everyone wanted that hole, and so there was no incentive, really, to use the width of the track.
I remember growing up that if you'd backed a horse in the Grand National, when it came to beaches, you always wanted the jockey to make
the
a move
angling
out. Right,
yeah.
To get to the point where the drop is not so bad. But apart from, I think, Lieutenant Rocco made a mistake when he jumped the fence on the Friday.
Noble Yates came down at beaches yesterday.
I don't think there were too many horses that were inconvenienced by being down on the inside rail at all. And once again, the race has changed its nature a fair bit, which has obviously allowed so many finishes and so many horses still in contention.
Shall we have a look at it?
Yes.
Let's do that. Right. Take it from the outset. And here we go. Randox Grand National 2024 in its entirety. And the first thing to note is shorter run to the first fence. They can't get ahead of steam up. The second thing to note is middle of the shot, half a white face, Korak Rambler. Well, he pretty much headbutts the first. And that is the most surprising element of the race.
He jumped beautifully last year. In all honesty, last year his jumping was outstanding. I think the race IQ data showed that he was 12 to 14 lengths better than the rest of the field. But it was a very unusual mistake for him.
And then he falls when loose at the second, which must have given Skew and Lucinda heart-stopping moments, but thankfully he's OK.
Yes, thankfully. It's very uncharacteristic of him. And I mean, Derek Fox had absolutely no chance at the first there.
And then it all settles down into quite a smooth rhythm with Glenn Gooley and Foxy Jacks up there in the early stages. Eldorado Allen on the right, giving Brendan Powell a good spin for a long way. Look where the winner is already. White Cap, around about a seventh on the inside. Careful enough, but just with so much daylight around him.
Yeah, and Paul Tannen made the point that after jumping the first couple of fences, he felt that Iron Maximus was careful, which is no bad thing, obviously, at Aintree. But I must admit, watching him through the race, I felt perhaps there were times where he looked like he wasn't travelling that well. It actually looked like he perhaps was just squeezing once or twice just to keep him in contention. But never did Paul Tannen ever panic. And I think that was crucial in saving a little bit for the end.
Statler is tailed off and not really enjoying the game at all. There's always one or two, aren't there, that aren't really taking to it. It didn't really look as though Mr. Incredible was loving it at the moment either, back on the inside of the Foynaven fence. Panda Boy's very well back. Noble Yates really taking scant interest.
Yeah, he just never really got going but kept plugging away. Never really looked like sort of featuring for one reason or another.
Watch Glenn Gooley, the leader here at the canal. Ooh, he was lucky there. Mm.
Very fortunate. Got in close, caught his back end on the way through. One horse who travelled beautifully,
that is Marla Mission getting hampered at the canal turn.
Very soon had to come a cropper. But Miss Manella Indo absolutely loved it, didn't he? He travelled and jumped beautifully. I think it's fair to say he's probably travelled better in this race than I've seen him in the last two seasons.
Loved it. Loved it. Statler's been pulled up now. Glenn Gooley, that's Manella Crooner, the outside, the black and white. Foxy Jacks, the inside. Then Eldorado Allen. And Cocoa Beach, the grey, not as prominent as he was last year. Noble Yates, another mistake. He actually jumped the worst of all, just about.
You just don't expect that, given, obviously, what we've seen from him. It's whether that's to do with his campaign. Perhaps he's been sort of quite unorthodox campaign for him over hurdles.
That was Limerick Lace making a mistake at the back. She actually ran quite well, considering she had a shocking trip on the way round.
Yeah, there were a couple who made mistakes but got into it. I mean, she was one. It's funny, Capodanno, I thought, in the red cap in the middle of the field in the J.P. McManus colours, I thought he travelled equally as well as he did last year, but similar to last year, checked out rather tamely at the end.
Yeah, he just didn't quite get home. Should we pick up David Maxwell? What a run in sixth. Second from the left here, the red colours with the chocolate sleeves, with only about three behind at the moment.
I mean, he had a hell of a spin, didn't he? And fair play to him for buying the horse and having a crack at it. He deserved to be there, didn't he? And the horse had the form obviously well back last year, so was in there with a chance, and that must have been some thrill towards the end for him.
OK, so now you've got two fences to come to the chair, and they really are not going really very slowly by Grand National standards after a circuit here.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about that. I was just thinking about Kitty's Light, who is positioned to the outside in the familiar red sleeves.
That's one march making a bad mistake.
Just thinking he could have probably done with a stronger pace, Kitty's Light, because I think he prefers running past horses, getting there, but he was actually in contention for a long way. He was more forward than I've seen him.
OK, and they jumped the 14th. They've got one to jump till the chair. Now, neither Mr Incredible nor Marla Remission had been faultless to this point. They're in similar colours, pale blue colours. If you look to the back, toward the right, second and third from the right, and they both go here at the chair. And the winner's not brilliant here. Paul Townend does very, very well at the chair, because just look at the winner, white cap the inside, then cast your eye back to the fallers. Oof.
Very good, Paul Townend. Unfortunately, Marla Mission's made a mistake. There's no chance for horse and rider to keep in tight. And Mr. Incredible, similarly, in behind, their races are over. But again, so many in close contention.
And in fact, I mean, I said faller, that's not right. There were no fallers. There were three unseats and no fallers at all, which is remarkable.
That is remarkable when you consider the fact that for the last, especially last year's Grand National, was such a brutal race when you watch back at it.
But only the first two fences.
But here, because I think of the approach, again, going back to the way that all the jockeys seem to have it in their minds before they set out, before the start, to be more considered in their approach, I think it paid off in the end.
And Caelan Quinn has joined us, first rider in the Grand National on Nassalam, who at the moment, as we pick it up out onto the second circuit, is in quite a nice position, Caelan, sort of about 7th or 8th, the white colours there, yeah, there we've got you. And at this point, what were you thinking?
I was happy enough at this stage. You know, he jumped so well the whole way. Probably in the end, just the weight's caught him out. But no, I still think he's run a good race.
We were just talking about how it seemed to be a sort of steadier, more stately Grand National than we're used to. I probably didn't feel like that to ride in. How was it for you, your first experience?
For first experience, it was pretty good. To be honest, I couldn't believe how much space there was. Obviously, the less amount of runners this year, there was just a bit more space, but it was a good first experience anyway.
I mean, it's interesting, because there were 32 rather than 40. You'd think, well, it's going to make a bit of a difference, but maybe not that much difference. To what extent do you think that was because the jockeys were using, you were all using the width of the track? That's Mac Totty being pulled up there.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. You know, you would think still 32 horses that it's a lot, but there is quite a lot of room still because, the track's so wide and everyone likes to have a bit of space, so everyone was using all of the track.
And you're still going OK here. Just lost your pitch a little bit, but still going OK. More down toward the inside as we come to Foinaven.
Yeah, the plan was to originally line up down the middle, just so he had that bit of room early. But he does go a bit left at his jump, so through the race I naturally knew I would, end up towards the inner.
This is the canal turn second time. All streaming over it. Panda Boy in rear. That's Farouk Delane out the back about to be pulled up. Panda Boy didn't really figure, did he, Rishi?
No, disappointing, I felt. One of the horses who just got in behind and never got into a rhythm. And if you think about the horses that played a part in the race, those are the ones that travelled really comfortably. One interesting thing, I wonder if Angus McNair is watching, because he's the one who always talks to me when we talk about analysing races and how they travel. And I know you're talking about how much space there is, Caelan, and you want everyone to spread out across the track. But it is interesting that Iron Maximus, Delta Work, ran down the inside rail. Manella Indo was never far off the inside rail. I'm not saying it's, but if you look at where Kitty's Light, for example, Late Night Pass, they were all out and wide on the outside, and it's a left-turning track. It maybe does play a part in it if you want to save a little bit of ground being down on the rail.
Yeah, obviously down the inner is the shortest way. But on the track, when you walk around, the fences are slightly bigger on the inner.
Still, they are still slightly bigger on the inner, aren't they?
Even at Beechers, the ground slightly falls away more on the left. Which, if you're confident in your horse's jumping ability, you're confident of going down the inner. But obviously, it was my lad's first time in the race, same as Kitty's leg and late night pass. So down the middle, the fence is, I think, a bit more easier to jump. Mm.
But if you looked at where Rachel Blackmore, Paul Townend, and the riders of Galvin and Delta Work were, Jack Kennedy and Sam Ewing, all four of those were placed toward the inside throughout.
Yeah, exactly. Manila Ender actually looked as if he might go on winning at this point, I thought. Iron Maximus was already off the bridle.
Now, the one thing that a lot of people noted to me yesterday, Caelan, was the fact that once the Spruce had been knocked off the first circuit, the second circuit, the cause really almost took no jumping at all. Did you feel that Spruce was packed in any way differently to how it was when you rode round here the first time?
No, I didn't see much difference in them. Obviously, second time round, they can't get all the birds back on.
No, sure.
So they're slightly a bit smaller, but there wasn't a lot of difference, I didn't think.
And do horses get accustomed quite quickly to what they can get away with? I.e., if they can brush through quite a bit of the top, will they then get a bit lower? Or are they still respecting the height of the fences?
Some of them do. They still respect them, you know. They're obviously quite different to normal fences, so they do still have a look at them. But they do get used to them, and maybe that's why some horses get unseated, because they think they take too much of a chance mm-hmm. of getting too low. For instance, I caught a Grambler at the first. He probably took a bit more of a chance. He was very low at it and just, you know, stumbled on the landing. But yeah, they do still have a look at them.
Did you realise it was him that had?
Yeah, he was
quite near you, wasn't he?
He was beside me. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
What were you thinking when you saw?
Well, I thought
you saw him go.
I thought I'd increase my chances a bit more, but yeah, I didn't plan out that way.
Did you go into yesterday feeling any kind of confidence, or were you thinking, like Gary was, as he said to me earlier in the week, he's got £10 too much?
I did know we had a lot of weight. But I was still very confident that, you know, he'd be able to jump and travel around there. And then when I walked the track, any bit of hope sort of went. It was dried out too much for him. But it was a great first experience for him. I'm sure we'll train him for it next year, and hopefully he can have a better crack at it next year. But
and you could almost have done with it with a Red Marauder type year, couldn't you? You could have almost done with the heavens opening all week and it being as sopping wet as it could possibly be.
Yeah, that would have been ideal. We thought we were going to get, you know, proper soft ground, maybe not heavy, but we thought it would be soft.
What did it feel like?
It was just very dead and tacky. It was probably good to soften most of it, and then, from Beechers to Valentine's, where they were describing heavy during the week, it was probably just soft, but it was real tacky ground around, you know, that area. So it did dry out quite a bit.
How is Paul Townend in the weighing room, Caelan? What sort of man, character, inspiration would he be to jockeys who are on their way up?
He sets a great example, and I think I've only been in the weighing room with him a couple of times, but the best bit about him, he's so relaxed, laid back. For like a couple of times when I was in the weighing room when we were at Cheltenham. For the amount of big rides he had, like you wouldn't even know. You'd think it's just a normal day, Plumpton or something like that. Mm. He's just so laid back. And I remember the first time I met him, first time I walked by him in the weighing room, he said hello to me. You know, he's just nice, friendly guy. And down to earth, he'd always have time to talk to you. But yeah, I think the best bit about him is just he's so laid back.
And I guess that is so crucial, Jonathan, for any sportsman really to have that that even temperament to be able to excel on the big stage.
Absolutely. I mean, we're seeing it in the golf with somebody like Scottie Scheffler at the minute. You need to be able to take the rough with the smooth in exactly the same way. And I think you need good horses to win big races, but yesterday showed you also need a good jockey because he could have very easily panicked there. There was a lot of stages where Iron Maximus maybe wasn't travelling quite how he'd have liked, but he just stayed super relaxed, got the horse into a rhythm, and he was so confident of what he had under him in those closing stages. I mean, a different jockey might not have won that race as convincingly, or at all.
First, second, third and fourth for Ireland. Not a massive surprise there, but one thing struck me, Rishi, and that's that, the winner is clearly of Gold Cup class, if that's the way he kind of continues to apply himself. The second has been favourite for a Gold Cup at a given point in his career. Likewise, the fourth. And the third's won one. I mean, that is... all four carried 11 stone plus for the first time in, I think, nearly 100 years or something.
Indeed. And what a cross-country chase it would have been at Cheltenham had it happened, with the second, third and fourth all lined up to run in it. But it is a race now, as we've often said, that the class comes to the fore. And it's probably going to be that way for the near future and for years to come. I don't think that's going to change. That is now the nature of the Grand National.
Yeah, but of course, as we said at the beginning of the show, every time you think you've got what the Grand National is, it confounds you the next year. And we'll find four horses who are carrying 10 stone something and, you know, horses come out of left field. So the leading British-trained horse home was Kitty's Light, who ran another mighty, mighty race for Christian Williams and Jack Tudor and their team. Christian is with us now. Christian, good morning.
Good morning.
And when we put it into that context and understand what those front four are or have done, what does that make you feel about yesterday's run?
That was great, very proud. Tried to play it down a little bit going into the race. We obviously had all the profile, but, you know, to finish in the first 8 or 10 would have been great. But, you know, we thought he had a genuine chance of winning the race, and we targeted. We didn't make any secret that we targeted the race all season. So, you know, it's great for him to go out there. I think people wrote him off a little bit with the ground and the fences. But, you know, jumping the last in front there was a very proud moment.
And what were you thinking? Were you thinking, well, surely I'm going to outstay all these from here?
Yeah, no. I could pick him after 3 or 4. He took to the fences, you know, very early. And he did stay very well. He probably just ran his race. You know, I'm not sure if he travelled a bit stronger in the cheek pieces and that maybe might have took his finishing kick away. Or, you know, maybe it's just a solid run. And like you said, it's probably very good renewal of the race. So he tried his heart out and couldn't do any more.
Do you think he could have been closer or improved his position if we'd had one of those really frenetic helter-skelter Grand Nationals where a horse or two horses really open the race up early on the second circuit?
That was the one thing Jack said when he came back, is how the horse travelled so well, so Mike didn't look at the times or anything, or but maybe it didn't quite go strong enough. But, you know, I don't want to sit here and, you know, try and make up excuses. We're obviously very proud of the horse. We had a wonderful few days. And it's great for him to come back and see him run so well. Owners had a great day. You know, Lord Snooty's owners were there, horse run very well. So we've had a wonderful 3 days.
Let's have a look at Kitty's Light this morning. This is to him being turned out just a few moments ago.
Yeah, he loves it on the field. And Lord Snooty's in great form as well. They obviously travelled together, stayed up together. And they had a good few days away. They ate up there. They enjoyed going out on the track in the morning, pick a grass there on the Friday. And it just shows that, you know, to run in such a special race and spend two days away from the yard, 4 or 5 hours travelling, and come back and be in great form. And, you know, they're probably happy with themselves. They obviously know he ran a good race and is probably pleased with what he did, as you can see.
And this is his time, isn't it? Kitty's time. You know, he can take lots of hard races, or apparently hard races, in relatively quick succession at this time of year. What are you going to do now?
Yeah, I would have thought the owners would be keen to go to Sandown. He obviously won the race last year. It'd be great to give him a chance to retain his trophy. But he did have a hard race. He obviously had a hard race yesterday. He'd be a little bit stiff for a few days. Take him in the sea as much as we can. But I would have thought that, fingers crossed, we'll be at Sandown for the Bet365 Gold Cup.
And do you find a bit that you've got your you know, that's your natural hydrotherapy right on your doorstep there, and can you see the effects of that working when a horse is a bit stiff and sore quite quickly, as long as it's nothing too serious?
Yeah, we're lucky it's just on the doorstep. We don't really have to travel to it. So, no, we're very lucky to have that there, and I'll give him every chance of heading to Sandown.
Christian, it was lovely to see him run so well yesterday, and congratulations. Glad the whole family had such an enjoyable trip to Aintree.
Thank you very much.
Christian Williams, who was the leading British-based trainer in the Grand National with Kitty Light's excellent fifth placing. But what about David Maxwell, the brilliant amateur rider who has finished sixth in the race on Ain't That a Shame? Well, Jonathan, I mean, I think he exceeded a lot of people's expectations, even though the horse had been second favourite last year.
I think he did, yeah. And there's always a little bit of, I don't know, a few raised eyebrows with him and his riding style and everything else. But he rode brilliantly, I thought. And he, like I said earlier, he has every right to be there. And I thought it was a great spin for him. Really pleased. And he's such good value for us, isn't he, before and after, with his quotes and his love for the game. It's good to have an amateur in there like that who's just really committed to having a crack.
You probably see more of Dave in the weighing room than you do of Paul Townend, don't you?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, he's a good fella, David. I actually walked a track with him yesterday, him and Mick Fitzgerald. He was buzzing yesterday to have a ride in it.
And, of course, you're both two of Downpatrick's finest, aren't you?
Yeah, we are.
Well, it's good to have you both on the show, because here he is. Morning, David.
Morning, Nick.
Wow, what about that, then? I know you knew you'd bought a nice horse, but were you expecting that sort of a run?
I have to say, I wasn't. I was expecting to be able to go a circuit, maybe. After that, it was uncharted territory, because I've only been around there once in the Fox Hunters. I actually thought, when I walked the track with Caelan, I thought, God, I'm going to have a mental block here, and when we get to the chair, I'm going to come off at the elbow, because I only ever go around this track once, not twice. And when we got to the chair first time round, I thought, oh, actually, this is okay. I think I can get round. It's going to be all right. But I have to say, Ain't That a Shame was just the most straightforward ride I could possibly have wished for in the race, in that he measured his fences himself. The only time he ever made a mistake was two after the canal turn, when I got a bit cocky and thought, I know what's going on here, I can see a stride. And I went, 1, 2, and he went, well, no, there's a third here. And he absolutely demolished it. And I just said into his ear, sorry about that, lad, I won't try that again. And I left him alone for the rest of it.
So almost the perfect choice of Grand National ride. Because you were saying to me earlier in the week that you were worried that he was pretty onward bound, and that he might just run off a little bit, but evidently not.
He wasn't really strong in the race. Well, they go a really good clip, so you know, unless it's properly trying to run away, you're probably not going to find yourself being tanked off with. But actually, with him, as long as he had a bit of cover, he was fine. He was jumping so well after a circuit, he was starting to out jump everything around him, and I found myself in a bit too much space, and he was getting a bit of a head of steam. But as soon as I found him a little pocket to get back into, he was great. No, he was an absolute dream.
We were talking the other day about your kind of career highlights. You've won a big race at Punchestown, at the Punchestown Festival. You've won a Grade 3 race in France. You've been round the Grand National fences to good effect several times. You've been placed in the Fox Hunters there. Where did yesterday match up in terms of how you felt leaving the race course?
I would say top number one feeling of my career in racing, because you actually realise with the Grand National, and it's very important for us in racing to remember this, that it's the Grand National that the world watches. And I hadn't even realised it until the number of text messages and WhatsApps I've had from people who don't watch racing from one end of the year to the next, who watch the Grand National. And so it's a hugely important horse race. And it's actually why it's hugely important that we in racing get it right. And I think actually we really did this year. I mean, it was a brilliant race. It was great that there were so many horses in contention turning in. I mean, that's the measure of it having gone right, I think.
And at what point were you at your most hopeful that you could take a really meaningful hand in the race?
Melling Road, second time round. I thought, oi, oi, I might be in with a squeak here. And then I looked around and I just saw all of these, including Caelan, by the way, right beside me, all of these good horses, also going very well. And I thought, well, I'm probably not going to be placed, but we are probably going to finish, because you don't tend to fall at the last two. For some reason, they seem to jump those.
And interestingly, and this is, I think, what confounded a lot of people, you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. You had about 8 or 9 horses in front of you jumping the last, and you've ended up finishing 6. And that's, I think, the thing that maybe did surprise a few people, was how well he finished off for you, with his head bowed, trying all the way to the line.
He's a very honest game horse. But maybe it's just my unconventional riding style, Nick, in a finish.
What, that has motivated him to greater effect, you mean? And you got up to do Danny Mullins for 6th as well.
I know.
You outrode Danny Mullins for 6th.
I was very determined to get to nick that 6th place.
It does have a better ring to it, doesn't it? It does have a nice ring if you finished in the first 6. The other point we made earlier in the week when we were talking was this horse's appreciation of really, really soft ground as well. That if it, again, a bit like we were talking with Caelan earlier, if it had been really wet, that he might have gone even better.
Yeah, I mean, it had dried to good to soft from really properly bottomless on Thursday, and yeah, so it would have been better if we had have had softer ground. But I don't think I could have really thought of any closer than 6th. So you know, I'm delighted with that.
Yeah. Now, so there is absolutely no shot that you're not going to come back and do this again next year.
If they were running again today, I'd be lining up in it. I'm already plotting it out with Henry. Ain't that a shame's route to the race next year? 100% certainty. While I have breath in my body, we'll be at Aintree April next year.
While you have breath in your body, it's also 100% certainty, isn't it, that you're going to Plumpton this afternoon?
No, I'm not.
Are you not?
No, the ground's dried a bit too much.
Okay.
And it's just it's gone good there, and it's just probably a little bit sharp for Jatalui. But I was going to.
Okay. Well, it's very convenient that the ground has dried up accordingly, so you can at least luxuriate in the Grand National for one well-deserved Sunday afternoon. David, thanks so much for chatting to us. All the very best.
Thanks, Nick.
Dave Maxwell, who rode Ain't That a Shame to finish 6th. The gift that keeps on giving.
I have to say, I know that a lot of people in racing, or certainly on social media, there's a lot of split opinion about David Maxwell's position and what he does, but I can't see anything negative about it. It is absolutely a joy to hear someone speak with that honesty, the refreshing nature of which he assesses his own ability as a rider, but also the enthusiasm he has. That should be shared with every single person in the sport. Hearing him talk about his experience yesterday at Aintree, it's magical.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? And I guess that is the beauty of the game, is that people can participate in this particular race from all sorts of different places. You get horses coming in from just about everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. It's great to have everyone involved.
And I hadn't actually appreciated that until David said it, but
you were still not that far away coming down to the second last.
Yeah, I honestly think he's run as hard out. He's tried hard. You know, he was carrying a lot of weight, and you know, I got some buzz out of it anyway.
I bet you did. Let's just talk a little bit about your season, because there was a point where you were seriously threatening to be champion conditional, and were right on Paddy Wadge's tail. Obviously, then the injury came. You only came back earlier this week at Taunton. How are you feeling about the rest of the campaign and getting through the summer and how the future's opening up?
I've had a great season. You know, I'm obviously a bit gutted about getting injured and not having a crack at the title. There's only 2 weeks left now, so it's probably no chance of getting them back.
When you say probably no chance, is it?
Depends how the next couple of days go.
How many behind are you?
I think it must be 9, 10 now, maybe more.
So you need a couple of trebles and...
Yeah. It's probably not achievable now, but you never say never.
OK. And what about the link-up with Gary Moore? Because obviously you started off with Warren Greatrex and did well there. That was the first job since coming from Ireland. Now with Gary, Jamie's retired, Josh has retired, you and Niall Houlihan kind of splitting the rides. It's a big opportunity.
Very big opportunity. I'm very grateful. Also, I count myself very lucky as well, just to, you know, fall into that position. And, you know, I'm very thankful for all the opportunities he's given me.
What kind of bloke is Gary to ride for?
he's great, to be honest. You know, he doesn't overcomplicate it with instructions. And he's not scared to tell you if you've done something wrong, which I think is the best thing. You know, some people, they don't tell you the truth to your face, and sometimes it's better to someone to say it to your face rather than behind your back, and that's exactly what he does.
It was quite funny when you wrote a winner for him at Kempton earlier in the season. I don't know if you saw the interview afterwards.
I did. I thought it was very cheeky, that.
He was singing your praises.
Yeah.
And Niall Houlihan's praises, of course. And he said, yeah, they're two good lads. They both work really hard. And then he went, well, actually, he doesn't, but he's a good rider anyway.
Yeah, that was very cheeky. I think I work harder than Niall.
You'll be working hard between now and the end of the season, won't you?
Yeah, definitely. You know, we've still a good few horses to run on. They want slightly better ground, so hopefully now till the end of the season, we'll still be busy.
Your mum was there yesterday, wasn't she?
Yeah, my mum and dad. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. How were her nerves?
Not very good, I don't think. I don't even think she watched the race, to be honest.
But they're obviously great supporters. Big thrill for them to come over to it.
Yeah, they were delighted to be there. It's obviously a very big day, and you know, lots of my other family come over as well. They were all buzzing to be there.
Fantastic. One man who is always buzzing at Aintree, and he definitely was buzzing yesterday afternoon, is Gordon Elliott. What a week. 3 Grade 1 winners, about the tiniest nostril away imaginable from a fourth with Bob Olinger, and a wonderful second and fourth in the Grand National with Delta Work and Galvin. Back numbers neither of them. Gordon Elliott, good morning.
Morning, Nick, how are you?
Do you know, it struck me yesterday when Tom and Daryl were interviewing you, I don't think I've ever seen you look as though you're enjoying yourself quite so much.
You know how hard it is to win these big races. You know, all our horses ran, well, most of them ran out of skin all week, and just to win them Grade Ones is unbelievable. And yeah, I get a good kick out of it, and I wear my heart on my sleeve. And listen, if you don't enjoy them days, Nick, we shouldn't be in the game.
And I guess, is there something for you? Because we know what Tiger Roll did, but because that first Grand National, you know, effectively your first rules winner, Silver Birch, 2007. Is that rooted in you so deeply that whenever you go back to that place, you just feel a bit different?
Yeah, it's just one of them places. It's probably not as much pressure as Cheltenham, you know, and it's more relaxing. But, you know, I love going to Liverpool. It's a great week's race. And, thankfully, it's a lucky track for us.
Now, how are all the Grand National horses this morning? You ran seven in the end, and obviously Delta Work and Galvin ran brilliantly and others ran creditably. Are they all OK today?
Yeah, they're all home. They got home this morning at 7:30. They're all home. They've been out in the fields for a little take of grass, and they're all in their stable happy now. Yeah, no, they all came home 100%. Thank God.
And it was lovely before racing yesterday to see Tiger Roll in the parade. Yeah. You look at him. You want to run him again?
To be honest, I said it to Teddy O'Leary yesterday. So I think we might have retired him too early. He was bucking and squealing going around the ring. He definitely knew where he was, but look, he's having a happy retirement in Jigginstown now, and yeah, it was great to see him enjoying himself yesterday.
What a cracking horse he is, and what a cracking horse he's been. Tell me a little bit about your thoughts, particularly on Delta Work and Galvin yesterday.
I thought the two of them ran super races. There was no excuse whatsoever. You know, they jumped well the whole way, they got the run of the race. It's just got bet by a better horse on the day, which he looked very, very good with his horse yesterday. But both of my horses, there was no hard luck story, so I was delighted with the way they ran.
And I realise that, you know, they've achieved plenty in their own right yesterday, but do you plan next year just revolving around this race?
Yeah, look, obviously, the way they ran, you'd like to think that's the road we're going, but you know, they're probably not getting any younger, so it's not going to be any easier for them. But yeah, we'll work our way back towards the Grand National again, all being well.
And in terms of the week as a whole, you've got to be absolutely delighted. Grand National aside, what gave you the most pleasure?
I'd say the Mayor winning yesterday. You know, I was gutted when she got bet in Cheltenham because I kind of said how much I thought of her. But what she done yesterday, I thought looked special, and I got a brilliant kick out of that, to be honest.
We might just take a look at that brighter days ahead. You've trained so many members of her family. We know Caldwell Potter's now with Paul Nicholls, but you trained him. You trained the late Mighty Potter, who was a hell of a horse, and others. It seems to me you think she is the best. Is that a pretty unequivocal view now?
Well, time will tell. Listen, she's got a good bit to go before she Mighty Potter, but she's going the right way, and I think she's going to be strong at summer's grass, and we'll really look forward to next year with her.
What is it that you love about her so much?
She's just got a great attitude, she's very classy, and I loved the way she jumped yesterday. She was very quick from A to B, like very, very fast away from a hurdle. This is just very good.
I can almost see on that shot Jack Kennedy grinning away as she hits the line. Do you think he felt a bit of redemption after Cheltenham?
Ah, yeah, look, it just didn't happen in Cheltenham, you know. The race didn't work out for our mare in Cheltenham, but she got bet by a very good mare, so, you know, look, it didn't happen on the day, so I'd say Jack had a kick out of everything going right yesterday.
Yeah, and Founder 50 had to be really tough yesterday, didn't he?
He did, yeah. He kind of took a little stumble after the last. I'm not quite sure what happened, but it just took him a while to get his momentum going again, and he was tough, yeah. He was very honest, and he jumped great. He's settling better now. You can probably ride a race with him. When he was young, he was very, very keen, but he's relaxing now, which is very good.
Yeah, we just saw it there. It was almost as though he sort of half took a full step after the last fence, but he eyeballed Master Chewy and he got back up. Excellent performance from him. How do you think next season will look for him?
Look, he'll go 2 mile chasing. You know, it's a tough division, so he's going to hopefully improve again with the summer's grass, and we look forward to next season. But I'd imagine that'll be him now. He won't run again this season. I'd say he'll be finished now for the season. I'll be well.
Gordon, I just wanted to ask you one question about brighter days ahead for next season, if that's OK. How adventurous will you campaign her? Will you take her out of mare's only company and take on the boys whenever you can?
I obviously have to speak to Michael and Eddie about us, you know, whether we go chasing or whether we stay hurling. It hasn't been confirmed yet, but knowing Michael, he loves chasers. It wouldn't be the biggest shock in the world if she goes chasing next year.
Interesting. And Gordon, just finally, before we let you go, must talk about Jerry Colomb winning the bowl, particularly after a pretty hard race in the Gold Cup behind Galopin Deschamps. You obviously left him off for a little while in the middle of this season. Do you think next season he'll be able to take a sort of more sustained campaign, if you like? Because he seems the finished article now.
Yeah, he's getting stronger the whole time. Look, I thought he ran a very, very good race in the Gold Cup, and I thought he was good the other day. Jack kind of felt he maybe wasn't what he was in the Gold Cup the other day, but it was very gutsy to pull out and to give everything to Jack. You know, he kind of went snug at the end, but look, we'll probably start off in Down Royal and we'll work our way through the season from there. But he's got a couple of lengths to find on the winner of the Gold Cup, so hopefully he might improve over the summer again.
Well, it was quite an absorbing day of racing in Sydney yesterday. Now, a lot of us will have been preoccupied with what was going on at Aintree, but Randwick's racing had a little bit of everything. Something very, very unusual, something very emotionally powerful. What united all of this was Kieran Maher, who trained both significant winners and joins us on the line now. Kieran, good morning to you.
Morning, Nick.
Good evening to you, I should say. lovely to chat. An extraordinary day at Randwick. I think maybe we'll start with the Schweppes Sydney Cup, if we might. And Andrea Atzaney riding for you, and riding a horse called Circle of Fire, who used to run in the Royal Silks here for Sir Michael Stout. And the significance of the victory to Andrea, particularly given Sebastian Kierke, father of Stefano, being present at the track. Just tell me more.
Yeah, it's just funny how things work out. And, you know, can sometimes, you know, they just fall into place. But, I met Andrea sort of last June after Royal Ascot. We went to the Palio in Siena. And I got on with him quite well, and he always said, "Oh, if he's going to Hong Kong, and if you find a ride for him," and I said, "Yeah, no worries." Anyway, long story short, there's not a lot of options at that very lightweight. He had 51.5 kilos, and he's obviously world-class jockey, and he's hit the ground running in Hong Kong, and he's had, you know, obviously more experience than probably the locals here riding over ground, so I thought that it would fit. And I knew Stefano, you know, not really well, but you know, I've seen him around the track and say g'day to him most mornings, and it was fitting that that he could win the race, and Stefano's family was there.
Yeah, blue and green colour, Circle of Fire, really seeing it out strongly. And as you said, Sebastian Kierke was very moved after the race. Like Andrea Atzaney, Stefano was from Sardinia. And clearly, Andrea, not only delighted to ride a Group 1 winner for you at Royal Randwick, but also to pay tribute to somebody who was a great friend of his. And I think we're going to have a look just in a few moments. Here we are. This is Sebastian Kierke afterwards.
Yeah, it was phenomenal, really, how it all worked out. And he didn't actually get the smoothest run in transit during the race, but like you've seen there, he was very strong on the line, and it was a pretty special moment.
Kieran, are we just scratching the surface with this horse? I thought he was a horse of some quite significant promise for Sir Michael Stout, but a typical stouty, slow burn. Is he getting the hang of things nicely now?
I do think so. Like, he backed up within 7 days, and you know, he was a little bit keen, and you know, was wanting to overdo it in a slowly run race last Saturday, and the backup, you know, he was quite tractable and did everything right. And I do, the way he went through the line, I can't wait for the Melbourne Cup, actually.
And what will be the plan between now and the Melbourne Cup? What do you do between now and then?
He'll have a light freshen up for probably 3 weeks, And obviously, he's still an end tyre, so we like to keep them fairly busy, or active, I should say. And yeah, still have 3 weeks freshen up, and he'll continue to tick over. And, you know, I haven't fully mapped the plan out for him yet, but, you know, he'd probably have 2, maybe 3 runs into the cup.
Now, the Queen Elizabeth Stakes was as good a race over distance as you'll see in Australia. Now, we're having to join this on the most insane wide shot, because just to the right of picture, you might see the winner, your amazing mare Pride of Jenny and Declan Bates. But horses in the backwash include Via Sistina, who bolted up on her Australian debut, we know as a Group 1 performer in Europe. Mr. Brightside, one of the most prolific Group 1 winners in the Southern Hemisphere. Cascadian, very smart horse for James Cummings. Buckaroo, who was a rock-solid horse down here. This mare won twice at the Carnival last year in a week, both Group 1s. She's remarkable, Kieran. To what extent was this a brilliant ride? To what extent is she just continuing to blossom?
Well, it's a bit of a combination of it all, I think. She's definitely getting better with each preparation, I suppose. She sort of went to a new level last spring when she was able to win the 2 Group 1s. And then she come back being narrowly beaten over 7 furlongs in a Group 1. And I was confident that at a second go this preparation, she would see out the 2,000 metres stronger. But Declan, you know, full credit to him, he had the Norries to do that. You know, but I think he just, you know, he's got a lot of confidence in the mare and knew her very well. But even he said, I think she went across there was a crossing on the track about, I think it was about 150 metres after the start, maybe a furlong. And he said after she went over that, he said she just grabbed the bit and took off, and he said he was basically a passenger. But, yeah, it was a phenomenal performance. I was actually surprised that they let her get so far in front.
Given that we know what Via Sistina is capable of and how good she was in her Australian debut, given that we kind of know where we are with a horse like Buckaroo, and she's done that to them, how do you think she'd fare in a European group race? And I know I will have plenty of viewers this morning who are saying to me, give over, let's move on. This is an absurd argument to have.
Well, you know, I think it's been proven plenty of times that your stayers over there are superior. But especially at that top level. Yeah, you know, you can only beat what you're up against, I suppose. And like you said, you can draw some form lines through a couple of horses there. But and I think probably too, the fact that when she was beaten in the Australian Cup, the horse come from last. So it was sort of that the jockeys sort of had it in their mind to have the last crack at him. But, yeah, like 800 metres to go, they're in a different race.
Now, what do you got for Ascot for us?
I wish I could come back over to make amends. I'll definitely be there, but I won't have a horse this year.
Oh, that's a shame. That is a shame. But presumably it is something that your antennae are out for most of the time.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. If you find the right horse, you know, and our sprinters are usually the ones, you know, there's some massive races over here with huge purses like the Everest and, you know, different sprint races. So, yeah, still hoping to get back over there one day, but won't be this year.
Shot there of Nico de Boinville at the end on John Bond. But Arizona Cardinal it was, who emulated his grandmother Libertine by winning the Topham Chase for trainer Stuart Edmonds and jockey Kieran Gething. Stuart is with us in the studio. Stuart, great to see you. What a moment, what a day. How big a day for you and your team?
Oh, massive, yeah. When you haven't got... we've got sort of 40 horses. We haven't got many at that level. Mm. Everyone's very, very important.
And he is a horse who, but for a blip or two, has just developed a habit of winning races, of knowing how to win, and it seemed to me to come down to a test of guts from the elbow to the line.
Yeah, I think it was. I mean, maybe the horse in front was idling, not quite getting home, but, yeah, he really does stick his head down, tries very hard. Look, it was just great, wasn't it?
Green with black armbands there, and Kieran Gethings going a bit better at this point than I'd perhaps appreciated at the time, because my eye kept being drawn to James de Burley.
Yeah.
And he pinged the last, you just missed it a little bit. Do you think that helped you a little bit?
Not ungenuine, but I think probably then the second horse probably just idled it a bit in front and gave us something to run at. But he doesn't stop. He does keep galloping. He's just very genuine. Look, the main plan was we thought his jumping was very strong. It was the first time he'd jumped those fences. So, you know, that was the main reason for going to that Topham rather than a big handicap chase over conventional fences. We thought the fences would bring out a bit of improvement.
Is he a horse you think could run another circuit round there?
Good question, and I'm not totally sure. He ran at Warwick over 3 miles 2. He was bang there at the last, and he pulled up between the last and the line. He was absolutely legless. Now, at the time, we have had his win looked at since. Did he run out of oxygen? Did he run out of stamina? We're not totally sure. I'm not totally sure he's an out-and-out stayer. Mm.
And for you, it's been a really interesting few weeks because you went and won a graded race in Ireland with Marsh Wren, who ran a terrific race at the Cheltenham Festival as well. You've won a Topham as well. The yard seems to be just gathering quietly quite a bit of steam. I mean, it's not like you're a stranger to success at big festivals, but do you feel now that you're just pushing to another level?
Yeah, hopefully. You know, obviously you need the horsepower. We moved yards last August, and it was difficult, obviously, to get used to. They're completely different gallops.
How far have you gone?
I would say it's 10 roundabouts over Milton Keynes. So it's literally 12 miles the other side of Milton Keynes. But where before we had a 7-furlong uphill gallop, now we have a 2-furlong deep sand gallop, and a 5-furlong carpet gallop, circular also, well, oval. So it's a completely different way of training. Maybe initially I was adamant I didn't want to overdo them, probably underdid them. Then they were needing it, so then I probably overdid them. So now hopefully we've got a balance.
Can I just ask a question, Stu, about owners and Nick talking about the stable, improving the quality, etc.
Yeah.
What you want are owners that believe in you. And what was the thing that really struck me afterwards? And we've spoken this morning about how owners can do whatever they want because obviously they are the ones that pay the bills. What struck me about the owners of Arizona Cardinal was the fact that they had utter, complete faith that this horse was going to be ready for the big race on Friday, despite the couple of blips earlier in the season when he was pulled up a couple of times. I asked them, I said, were you ever any doubt that this horse was going to be here? Because this has been the target. They said never, never. That Stuart filled them with confidence all the way through the season. How much does it help to have people who are entirely backing you like that?
Yeah, people that trust you, obviously. But I think the biggest thing is you can be honest with them as well. I mean, this horse has struggled with respiratory problems. He just gets... he'll scope dirty. And we scoped him 3 days before we went to Exeter. Scoped absolutely clean, ran him at Exeter, very disappointing, pulled up, scoped immediately afterwards, full of mucus. You know, but if I always say you relate it to yourself. Who's to say within... I could leave here... I could come here without a cold, I could leave here with a cold. Mm. Who knows?
Like the studio is very cold.
It is absolutely
Yeah, it is quite cold, yeah. but I think as long as you're honest with them and they trust you, I think... I think because we haven't got so many of that higher level, the attention to detail for those horses, we scoped him 2 days before. We were very happy with him. Kieran comes in, he's a major part of the job.
Well, he's ridden for you for...
He rode out his claim for us, actually. He rode for us with his claim when he was at Mr. Hobbs's. He rode out his claim for us on a good mare, Maria's Benefit, at Doncaster. He was still claiming there, but obviously couldn't claim in a class two. So he rode out his claim that day for us. And yeah, he's ridden for us a long time. He's a good lad. He's a big part of the team. And he's a good bloke as well, you know.
And that consistency must be crucial.
Yeah, the consistency. he's just always the same. He doesn't have peaks and troughs as a person, so why would he have it in his riding?
And how about you? Are you the same?
No. My wife has to put up with a lot. And the daughter, Harriet, yeah, she has to put up with a lot. But I try to, but I'm fairly volatile, let's put it that way.
It was fabulous to see, a wonderful victory in the top and for Arizona Cardinal. Well, there will have been a few weeks during the course of this season when trainer Nicky Henderson wouldn't have been sure himself where the next winner was coming from, but he can now put that to rest because he's had a very good week at Aintree, including that brace of Grade 1 victories courtesy of Sergino and particularly John Bond, who won a spectacular edition of the Melling Chase and had to show his class and toughness. And Nicky can join me now. I'd say a slightly more relaxed figure than maybe a few weeks ago, Nicky. Well done.
As I said, it is quite nice to be back. I think for the last 3 weeks, we've done plenty of talking amongst all you guys, but normally it's about sick horses or not running horses and gloom and doom. So it's nice. And what a great week this was. I think you will not see three better days racing anywhere. And I just thought, well done, Aintree, well done, everybody, because it was just, it's great fun. And I just thought it went really well. Great results, great finishes, great Grand National. It was a proper 3 days that I think need celebrating.
Can we talk about Iron Maximus?
I could have told you quite a lot about him a few years ago. I genuinely wanted him to win. I mean, you know, he's JP's and Willie's a great mate. And we had him as a young horse for two seasons and he was a lovely, lovely big horse. He was a big, big baby. And I suppose our only contribution to this whole thing was probably to mind him through those early days, because it would have been easy to overdo him. He had talent, but he didn't know how to use it. And he's grown up a lot now. And I'm thrilled he won. I mean, my two were Iron Maximus and Ronnie's horse, Galvin, that I was sort of going to shout home. And they were first and fourth, so I'm just a great race, and I'm sure Maximus would, you know, it was tinged with a fair bit of sadness because Mike Greck was the most lovely, lovely guy, and we had some wonderful times. And sadly, the horses had to go to Ireland, and then sadly, we've lost Mike. But it was lovely that the whole family were there yesterday, and I know it was very emotional for them, but Maxine and all the children and, you know, it was sad, but it was great, and it must be celebrated that way, and we just remember a lovely man.